as we welcome you back to the Two Guys Named Chris Show. And say hello to Red Rachel in here today.
Hello.
Always good to see you. Ready to pack and ready to get out of town, down to Savannah and then Myrtle Beach?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Are you an overpacker or underpacker?
I'm an underpacker. Mm-hmm. I have one bag.
Well, I have two bags. I have my five salads packed away and ready to go. I've got some energy bars. I've got my pickleball.
I wish he was joking.
I have all of those things packed. I have my mouthpiece. I have my sweatbands.
I never thought for a second he was joking.
No.
It sounds like the same thing that Brian Koberger had. The Idaho killer when he was found in his car.
When his road trip kit.
Five salads.
Five salads. A random mouthpiece. Protein bars.
Oh, God, you're right.
He had the same pickleball app on his phone.
Yeah.
Pickleheads.
I'm looking for a game.
I download Pickleheads, and I'm looking for a game in Savannah, but I might have to pivot and play in Myrtle Beach because of the weather forecast.
It's not looking good.
We'll wait and see. Lisa Lanier's on the line. She's our official attorney of this program. Hello, Lisa. How are you?
Hey, I'm fantastic. Surely you can find a bunch of bougie middle-aged guys that have an indoor pickleball set up, right?
I'm going to try that today.
Surely it's not weather dependent.
Well, Pickleheads, I had an outdoor court also.
Is there a bougie subset?
It is like, it's all the bougie middle-aged guys and gals that are out there, you know. They're all right. In the ER, too, by the way.
Well.
They're popping up these indoor facilities are popping up like crazy. And some of them used to be indoor soccer for kids and volleyball, and other ones are brand new, but they're finding out that they can make so much money off the pickleballers.
Well,
indeed.
Listen, they just opened one here. Now, as of a year ago, I was playing in 35-degree weather. We were scraping courts and drying courts to play. Once I moved inside, if it's below 60, I'm like, oh, no, I have to play in. I have to play inside. You're right. You really get used to it fast. It's so nice indoors, you know. Let's get to the docket here. First, we discussed this case earlier this week. Fascinating. There's a guy named Robert Galitsa. He is from,
Arizona?
Arizona, yes. Arizona Lottery. Now, he works at a Circle K, and someone came in one night and bought a bunch of lottery tickets. I think it was 80, but they really only wanted,
They
printed 80, but he only wanted 65. So he walks out with 65 tickets. Now, those others were set aside. Robert went in the next day to go to work, clocked in, then realized, hey, the $12 million lottery winning ticket is sitting right here, cast aside by whoever had bought them the night before. So Robert clocks out.
Took off his uniform.
He goes from Superman to Bruce Wayne again, buys the winning lottery ticket.
Bruce Wayne.
Clark Kent. Clark Kent.
I was thinking that didn't sound right.
Goes from Superman to Clark Kent again, buys the winning lottery ticket, and says, I'm owed $12 million. Hand me my $12 million. But now they're saying, oh, no, not so fast. We don't know if this belongs to Circle K, the guy who bought the ticket, knowing it was a winner, or the state itself, because now it's so screwed up. My guess is, and Lisa can speak to this, it's going to go right back to the state. What do you think, Lisa?
Well, actually, the law in Arizona, their commission rules say that if a retailer overprints, once it's printed, it's a live ticket, and it is in play, and you can't undo that. And so the lottery rules say that if you overprint, the retailer owns the ticket and can be awarded the prize. And so what has happened is the employer, the retailer, Circle K, has filed a declaratory judgment action asking a judge to say that the rules apply and that they are the rightful owner if they cannot sort it out by the May 23rd deadline to claim the prize. Then it goes back into the lottery pool.
So the guy, Robert Galitsa, has no chance at it at all?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, I think it's a very strange set of circumstances for sure. Mm-hmm. But according to the lottery rules, it was an overprint, automatically became the property of Circle K.
Okay. Mm. But a pretty smart move by him to clock
out.
Good try.
Yeah.
Boy, I'll tell you, And I think Biggie probably feels this way. If you were this close to a $12.8 million lottery win.
You had it in your hand.
You had it in your hand and was savvy enough to know the rules and I'm going to buy this after the fact.
Off the clock.
Off the clock and punched out to do it. And then they give it to Circle K. I would be I'd be devastated. I mean, that's one
I wouldn't recover.
No, that's unrecoverable.
No. You know, just go walking into the desert and disappear.
Yeah.
And honestly, if I was the owner of the Circle K, I might say, let's split this. Let's just forget the law right now. I'll cash it and give you half of it.
You're known for your generosity. Many people say that.
Known for that. Yes.
I don't think anyone has ever said that.
Maybe if I was Robert Gawitza, I would go to Circle K and say, let's split this.
Let's talk about this.
Let's do it. Let's split it. Why not? You know? God, I did not expect that. I thought it would go back to the state. Very interesting.
And the ticket is in the possession of Circle K's hands because I have this mental image of someone walking up to him and just snatching it. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah, they took that right out of his hands.
Do you know, Lisa, would it matter if you purchase a winning ticket for a lottery that's already been drawn?
I don't think it really matters. It's considered, so the moment they overprinted, it became the property of Circle K. And really, he was doing something pretty shady, you know, to try to take their property, essentially.
I see.
It was not the clerk's to sell.
Mm-hmm,
out and went up to the clerk, it was not theirs to sell.
Okay.
So even if he bought it before the drawing, it wouldn't have been his?
Right, because as soon as it's overprinted, it's the property of Circle K.
So when Circle K gets it, is the owner of that Circle K who will get the $12 million?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's whoever, you know, the retailer is. And so I would think that would be if it's a franchise. Now, I don't know if this was a franchise or if this was corporate. But because right now the winning ticket is in the hands of Circle K Corporate. So this may be a corporate-owned store.
Man, that's too bad for that guy. He was a little shady, but I liked it. I liked him trying.
Yeah,
you know,
try.
Good effort. Let's go to New York, Washington Square Park. A snowball fight turned violent. Two police officers responding to a disorderly conduct call were injured when people started throwing snowballs at them. There's been a real split here over what exactly happened. Video shows officers being surrounded by a crowd, including adults, and they are pelting them with snowballs. The mayor, the newly elected mayor of New York City, has said, it's a snowball fight, it's no big deal. The cops are saying, no, people have been injured by this. These are the two opposing sides.
You can't say fun when you slam in snowballs in the back of an NYPD officer head. You can't say fun when you following these officers while they realize that it's too many people that's out there, so they just went to go back to their van, and you follow these people and you attack them.
From the videos that I've seen, it looks like a snowball fight.
The second guy is Mamdani. He's the new mayor, and he's saying, this is no big deal. He downplayed it. The first guy is a police officer and says, oh, no, charges need to be filed.
I've seen the videos. It looked pretty rough.
It's rough.
It wasn't fun.
Yeah, it wasn't just a...
Yeah, they weren't just having a... You know, no one was packing light snowballs and going, hee-hee.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they were running up with some pretty big, hard-looking ice.
And officers there to, quote, break up the snowball fight? Why?
Yeah, they were there to... disorderly conduct. Duck. Somebody had called, and so they went to straighten
it out. I think
it
started out as probably fun, and then I think it became too much. Probably one Karen called, was like, snowball fight in the park.
You don't know that, Biggie. You don't know that.
I'm going to say it's a Karen.
Objection.
Biggie's on to something there. Because what really happened was it was actually a planned event. Mm. It was advertised. It was planned. Because, you know, the city had like 2 feet of snow and they were shut down. And so people are, you know, they're not at work. They're home. They're bored, whatever. So these social media influencers said, hey, let's have in the park, let's have a giant community snowball fight. And they did. And it started out as all fun and games. But then some people got out of hand. There were a bunch of young adults there. And some of them climbed onto the top of a low flat roof, one-story structure to get better. Like they hauled some snowballs up there, and they were up there to get like a better aim at people. Mm-hmm. And that's when somebody called the police and said, hey, there's people now climbing on the buildings. Like, this is getting out of hand. And the police came in, and at first they walked right into the middle of the snowball fight. And I think that's where they started getting hit. But then they tried to get out, and people then were like, oh, this is fun. Let's chase them and keep hitting them. And then so it got out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
And but it did. It's kind of a little bit of both. Like, it started out as fun, but it took a bad turn. And the people there was been one guy that's arrested so far. And he's one of the social media influencers who started this. He has no criminal record. He's been charged with a misdemeanor, and, you know, the police association wanted him charged with a felony, and the judge said, no, this is, you know, the judge kind of saw it as this weird combination of, like, you know, it started out as fun, and then it took a malicious turn, and it's not right, and he should be charged. So I think at the end of the day, both sides are kind of right. Like, it was truly a snowball fight, and it was kind of fun, but it took a malicious turn, and they should be, prosecuted for that.
But the question is, felony? I don't think it'll be a felony, right? Just misdemeanor?
No, it's not. The judge said no way.
Okay, no on felony. Also, in New York, I just want to see if you were surprised by this. I thought this was going to be a big case. It turned out that the guy who was complaining actually won. His name is Seth Bukowski. He's 69 years old. He has a license plate, PB4WeGo. And New York, he had it for a while, and New York said, oh, you can't have that license plate anymore. It's scatological. It's about urination. He said, I'll take it all the way to the governor's office. And he did. The governor, Kathy Hochul, called him and said, I agree with you. This is a fun license plate. I'm going to let you have it. Here's the phone call.
Seth, this is Governor Kathy Hochul. I read about your plight in the news that the DMV took away your hilarious license plate. I loved it.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, I'm going to get it back for you. I think everybody should be reminded to pee before you go. I have kids and grandkids, and I support the effort wholeheartedly. So I think we're going to work on getting that back to you.
That sounds wonderful, Governor. Thank you so very much.
So he did get the license plate back. But Biggie's theory now is that everybody will start calling her saying, hey, I got a license plate I want back and that kind of
thing. I had we before we go.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Lisa? I'm surprised.
It's a great result because usually when you go up against the DMV about vanity plates, you lose, right? Usually the consumer, the resident, the taxpayer loses. Mm-hmm. But here, this guy got the idea from somebody that has the exact same vanity plate. In this situation, it was a grandma, not a grandpa, that had it. And she was in New Hampshire, and she appealed to Governor Sununu, who did the same thing. He said, this is out of hand. The DMV needs to chill. And he granted her the license plate. So this guy said, hey, I'm going to try the same thing. And it worked.
How about that? Huh. A lot of power for the governor there to just overrule the DMV and say, okay, you can have it. But
pretty cool.
Do you think more and more people will start to do this with their own, like, I'm Big Sexy 69, I'm going to go to the governor and
that's
see.
The thing, yeah, like, hey, I want that on my plate.
And
yeah, but I think the governor's going to start putting them in file 13. I think this is one and done.
I think you're right. Speaking of a personalized license plate, Chris Dim noticed this. There's a woman here in North Carolina, very close to us. Her name is Michelle Hundley Smith. She was missing for 24 years. I'm sure you've seen the story. Now, a week ago, she reappeared out of nowhere. People have been trying to find her for 24 years. Chris Dim saw that her license plate was...
It's one of my fascinating details about the cases, and there are a lot, is that, you know, when they showed in the news the initial missing notification that her family had put out. And it was a picture of the van that she drove. Mm-hmm. And it said, have you seen this woman? She was Christmas shopping. We haven't seen her.
Yeah.
And then it had a picture of her license plate. And it was personalized, too. And it said, rockin' on.
Was it
R-O-K-N-O-N?
So what we think is she's a big fan of this program and may have called us over the years and us not know it.
She
kept her in the area.
24 years ago, she goes Christmas shopping and disappears. And she said, well, she hasn't said this. We're hoping she'll say, I was going to leave and go across the country.
I just couldn't.
Mm-hmm. I just love this radio show so much.
They rock on.
And now that Chris Dim's retiring, she's giving herself up.
No more rocking on.
Yeah. It can't rock on now. He's leaving.
You ruined her.
Yeah, that's it. So she's out of hiding now after 24 years. The question is, Lisa, has she done anything wrong? She just disappeared. What law has she broken?
Well, there is a little update to the story. So the DA, the local DA, decided not to charge her with anything for her disappearance, which I think was absolutely the correct thing to do. Mm-hmm. But she has now been arrested on charges in another county for failure to appear for a DWI charge that was November 11th, 2001, just shortly before she disappeared. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I kind of wonder, did that play some role in her decision to disappear, the fact that she had this pending DWI charge? But she's out on bond now, and she will have to face the music for that very old charge and failure to appear.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing. That's the only legal consequence that she's had. So,
is there such a thing as abandonment? I mean, would that be a charge in some cases like this?
You know, you don't really. I mean, she was claiming, she said domestic issues, which kind of I think she was implying that there was some domestic violence or something. She didn't come right out and say. She said she didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that, you know, people do this all the time. They take off, and usually it's the male of the couple, you know, that, you mm-hmm. know, and you get child support enforcement involved. I don't know if her husband ever tried to do anything like that, if she was gainfully employed. You know, those are the issues that arise when we see this happen time and again. And there's never criminal charges.
Well, do we know any information? Like, did she pay taxes? Did she change her name and have a different...
She didn't change her name, but, you know, she has a very common name. And so her name's Michelle Smith. And
right.
so, you know, I'm sure you can blend in as a Michelle Smith. She did move to close to South Carolina, not quite in South Carolina. But I think she continued to function as Michelle Smith, and just, you know, nobody was... I don't know if they were looking that hard for her, really. I mean, if you know.
Guess not.
How hard were you looking, really? You know?
Yeah, really.
It was just a couple hours away.
I mean, geez, she's yeah. right here in the area, and, you know, I guess they didn't fire her for 24 years.
I never know what this says, and you're a parent. Lisa, you're a parent as well. Anytime one of these situations happens, my mother goes, I get it.
I think every parent has had that thought, like, if I could just get in the car and drive.
Full tank of gas, just drive west.
Yep. Get off the grid.
And ever since we were little, she'd go, anytime somebody would disappear and pop up, she'd be like, I get it.
Yeah, exactly.
The dream.
She had three kids, you know, and the one that was that you've seen speaking out more was 14 years old when she disappeared. It's really sad.
That is.
And the kid said we have mixed feelings about it because, you know, we're pissed at her.
I get it.
But at the same time, we're glad she's alive.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I'm sure they are ticked at her.
Yeah.
For Canada, and we're stunned by this also, there's a strip club there called Sweet Spot. And it has sparked immediate backlash because they have moved into a downtown area in Canada, near Vancouver, I believe. And it is right next to a place called Harbor Dance Studios, which is a children's dance studio where they do tap and ballet and so forth. So a lot of the residents are saying, wait a minute, why is this strip club opening?
I thought they weren't allowing any strip clubs around here. That's blowing my mind right now, actually.
This is big news to us at the lodge.
I don't think most reasonable people would think putting a strip club next to a children's school is a good idea. I suppose in this case, at least one person does. However, it'll be interesting to see what the city council thinks of this.
That last person you heard there is dance studio owner Carl Butterworth, who says, I don't understand this at all. Why is a strip club being allowed to open right next to this dance studio? That wouldn't happen in the U.S., would it, Lisa?
No. In the U.S., we really take great care to try to situate clubs, adult entertainment clubs, away from schools, churches, things like that. But here, one of the commentators that I read said that this downtown area, and it's very much like a little quaint downtown area, has been suffering from some really overinflated prices for rent, and they're having a hard time getting tenants, and that may have been something that they've had something to do with why this club could afford the rent. And they didn't want downtown to decay and sit empty, and so they're doing whatever they can do to get businesses in there. And like, there was on the other side of the strip club, there was an antique shop that was already relocating because of the high rent, and so that may have had something to do with it, because they're fully licensed business and they've already been allowed to open up there. They've had their grand opening, and so it would be a big reversal for the council to require them to move.
Very surprising. Mm-hmm. But I get it. You know, you got to do what you got to do. We need to fill these store spaces.
And they keep different hours, I'm sure, from the dance school, you know, and I don't think the dance school's in there late in the evening. And the one thing
that's
funny is because it's called the Sweet Spot. So I'm imagining these little kids in their tutus going and peeking in next door thinking it's like a bakery or something.
Well, we did get some callers and emailers saying, well, it's just an automatic thing. You go right from the dance studio.
Once you graduate from one.
Yeah.
You need a job.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And so it's a good thing, really. Well, I guess it's going to happen. And Canada, or at least this town in Canada, doesn't have the same laws we have in the U.S. Unbelievable. Lisa Lanier, our official attorney, all over it yet again.